This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 180. My other car is a pleasure pony. Electric Sisterhood, home of the best,
the fucking best,
your gaming, tech, gadget, and anime podcast. I'm Ninja Sista.
And I am Pandalicious.
Hello, people! How are you?
Feels like it's been a very long time.
It has. It's been a very long time. I got a cold, just in case you didn't notice.
Nope, I didn't notice.
Okay, well, it'll become more prevalent as we get further into the podcast, because my Bostonian will come flying out. Much like other information, like stuff that's on our website. So make sure that you visit us at www.electricsisterhood.com, or you can use the short address, which is
esh.mobi. That's esh.mobi. The short address will bounce to the long one, and you can check out any articles that have been written within the week. If you have any questions about those articles or just questions for us, you can email us at questions@esh.mobi. If you aren't listening to us on iTunes, you can check us out there. You can plug us into any RSS reader, any podcast search engine, and you can also listen to some great shows that are coming out of the ESH camp.
That's right. We've got a bunch of shows that are being produced and made and helmed and all that good stuff by our very own ESH crew alum. So if you're not aware, make sure that you're checking them out. King Baby Duck has a website called BostonBastardBrigade.com with a bunch of bastards and wenches from the Bostonian area talking about all kinds of cool things, from sports to drama to theater to video games and just about anything under the sun. Those guys will talk about all of it with a uniquely Bostonian perspective. So make sure that you're checking that out. Their new episodes come out every Tuesday, so a great follow-up to getting your week started off right. You got us Monday. The bastards come in on Tuesday. And then sweeping cleanup right now because he's the man. Deuces Wild has his own show, Geek Aggro, coming out every Wednesday. So right there, the ESH network, basically, has got you covered till the hump day. To get you through the rest of the week, you can follow some of the randomness that we come up with, both on the website as well as on our various Twitter accounts. I can be followed at twitter.com/ninjasista.
And I'm at twitter.com/ladyesh.
You can follow King Baby Duck at twitter.com/king_baby_duck. Deuces Wild at twitter.com/deuceswild. And Vicious Smith, our boy, at www.twitter.com/viciousSmith. It's very simple. Make with the following and the follow Fridaying. I don't have enough people following me.
I always forget to do follow Friday.
I haven't done it in a while, but I really need to because there's some bomb-ass people out there that need to be followed.
Yeah, like stalker-ishness.
It's internet stalking, so it's not as dangerous, right?
Let's not go into that.
Okay, so with that said, we're going to dive right into the episode, but I want to remind you guys, we're pretty much going to let you know, and then I'll remind you later, that we actually have some of the extra bits that we recorded at CES that we're going to be sharing with you at the ends of the episodes for the next couple of weeks of the podcast. So you want to make sure that you stick around and listen to those guys. I'll let you know what it's coming up in the episode, I promise.
Yeah, she will. I have nothing to do with them. I wasn't there.
Hey, I tried to get you to go. I had an extra
I know.
I was willing to fly you even.
I know.
Could have met Lady Gaga.
Anyway, we have an episode to do.
Yes.
Stop name dropping.
I'm just saying. Emperor and Spider. Hey. Anyway, I saw Leo Laporte, but I didn't say hi because he was recording Twit TV. He was busy. Sigh.
So.
Anyway, we've got a bunch to talk about. It's not going to be about CES. Like I said, the extra bits are for that, but there is going to be more CES coverage coming on the website. We're about pretty much games and tech stuff here. We did the tech stuff last week. Let's talk about games.
I like games. I
there's
can talk
all
about
kinds
that.
Of stuff that's just been dropping all over the place. And I haven't gotten my hands on all of it yet. But I have gotten my hands on a couple of games. And one of them we're going to talk about today. And it just kind of lines up really well because we got an email from one of our listeners, Trinity Thousand, also known as Trinity Angel. What's up, Trinity? How you doing? And she wanted to talk about, or actually have us talk about, Bayonetta compared to Hideki Kamiya's Devil May Cry game, because she recently picked up Bayonetta on the 360 and is really enjoying it, and just wanted to know what our thoughts were and what we thought about the Avatar movie and if we played the Avatar game, and go from there.
Okay.
So, right on, because literally we had planned to talk about Bayonetta on this episode. So, were you reading our minds, Trinity? Did you have that power? And if so, get out of my head!
I didn't get this mail. Was this directed solely at you? Because I did not get this email.
No, it was directed at fresh@electricsisterhood.com, which you should have got it.
I didn't get it, but that's okay.
I'll fix it later. So, here's the deal. Bayonetta. Let's talk about that first. And then we can get into Avatar on the back end, because that's going to be real quick.
Are you sure you don't want to take Bayonetta from the back?
I don't want to take Bayonetta
from the back. She might want to be taken by
There are other people that probably do, but I do not.
But anyway, if you haven't had a chance yet, because I know from hearing other people that I talk to very often that a lot of them who have Gamefly accounts are having a very hard time getting their hands on this game. That's because people are holding on to it, not for the game's sake, but for her and how
all right.
she sounds.
Let's run down the game first, so then we can get into all of the juicy bits. Because there's lots of juicy bits. So you might remember that we talked a little bit about Bayonetta back when we went to E3 last year.
You did. I only saw her. I did not.
Dude, you could have played the demo. The lines weren't really that bad, and the demo was solid.
I just kept seeing the model walking around, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Okay, so the game basically plays, you know, very much like a Devil May Cry game, which shouldn't surprise anyone because one of the main developers, designers, directors for the Devil May Cry game was Hideki Kamiya, who also did...
Kamehameha!
No, not Kamehameha. No. No. Bad Panda. Go sit in the
pool. I love those commercials, but anyway.
also did Okami, which I think still is one of the most beautiful games that's ever been made.
Kamehameha.
Stop it. So it very much in style as well as actual gameplay is like Devilness May Cry, would you say? Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird.
So the mechanics as far as, you know, the weapon types, the aesthetics definitely have that very, you know, kind of mesh of Celtic and ethereal backgrounds that, you know, you get out of your Devil May Cry series across the board. So that feel is definitely there. But I make no bones about it, Bayonetta is a one-of-a-kind, unique game.
She's a hoe.
Okay, we're not going to cast aspersions to her character.
I'm not casting anything. You can hear it in her dialogue. You can hear it. You can see it in the way that she walks, in the way that she fights. She's like orgasming through half of the game.
Well, first of all, Platinum Games, which is the developer for the game, and Sega is releasing it, is the distributor for the game. Through their entire dev blog, they've always said that they wanted to make a very sexy, very strong.
Oh, they made
character.
Sexy, all right. Dare I say even trampish?
Okay, she's not trampish, but she definitely embraces her sexy.
She wrote the book on sexiness.
Yeah,
bloodiness.
Okay, first of all, I mean, we got to talk about the different attacks. Okay, so why don't you break down some of the attacks, like the torture attacks? And
okay, so because, you know, in order to have a very confident, powerful woman, she needs to be able to, let's say, keep her audience focused. Much like a dominatrix would with, oh, I don't know, a submissive. And I don't know, I have a little background in this. Not that I'm a dominatrix, but I know what I'm talking about. So just like in a Devil May Cry game, you kind of have like a magic, like instead of a devil gauge, you have a magic gauge. Because who would have thought that Bayonetta is a witch? Without spoiling any story. So she's got a magic gauge. So if you're playing in normal, you know, as you're beating the ever-loving crap out of everything, your magic gauge goes up. However, when you get hit, that depletes. But say you magically don't get hit, and I mean, with Witch Time, you shouldn't be getting hit at all.
So I get hit.
You shouldn't be. That's what the evading is for, so you never get
hit. I'm really bad at evading.
But anyway, magically, let's just say, Ninja, that you don't get hit, you get your magic gauge up. You'll then get a YB combination, which I think is very interesting considering that most 360 games, if they're going to do a QuickTime event, will often use, you know, they won't do Y and B, but they'll do like A and X.
Yes.
Or like just one solid button. So I like the fact that they're changing up buttons. Good on you. But say you have an angel, magic full gauge, and up, here comes the quick time event, and you hit both of those for a torture attack. I'm sorry, climaxes are different.
Yes. We'll get to those.
Yeah, climax is coming, guys. We're building up to it. And wow. Yeah, depending on the type of angel that you're fighting, the torture attack will be different. If it's just a regular run-of-the-mill, I think they're called applaud.
Yes.
You can either kick them into Iron Maidens, killing them, shoving their head into a guillotine and chopping it off. If you're up in the air and you happen to do a torture attack, this like spiky levy pull thing will happen, and you'll put them on the other side of it and you'll pull the cord down and kill them. There is the, if you have those little angelic ball things with wings, I don't know what they're called, but they're stupid and they really don't do anything but fly around, you can kick them. Like soccer balls, not too much of a.
Well, if you take, the panther punch is what that's called. If you take your time in shooting them, they do eventually actually spike their wings up and kind of come at you like a bull.
Oh, head on. See, I've never been hit by one of those because I usually just kill them.
Yeah, I kill them too, but I actually waited around because I was like, dude, they have to do something. Everything attacks me. And sure enough, it just takes a while for them to actually get into a position where they actually will do it.
All right, see, I've never been hit by one of those, so I just thought they were something to help me keep my gauge going because keeping gauges going is essential in the game.
Oh, and combo multipliers will be your best friend.
Yes, they will. Eventually, you'll come across an enemy called Grace and Glory. They're the red and blue birdie thingies. Bird angel mechanic things, and I hate them because they move really fast. One's made of completely of fire while the other one's kind of electricity, and you eventually get a weapon that mimics their abilities, but that's completely different, and I'll move on. You'll put them into a vise with two claws, and you'll rotate your left analog stick to crunch them.
Yes.
So, I mean, it really kind of depends on what you're fighting. The torture attack will be different. Later on, you do get another enemy called a Joy, and if you're as horny as most 12-year-old boys are when the game came out and they played it and didn't get to that part, but they wanted to see more of the gameplay, probably went on YouTube to go find this. But joys are angels. And
they have the joy down in some parts.
They're girls. They're probably the only female enemy that you'll encounter in the game besides...
Well, definitively female, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jean is...
Yes, but she's not. Well, we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We are going to spoil the game for you. I'm warning you now. We're going to do it.
I'm going to try not to.
I'm just going to let you know. I'm
for that.
Yeah, well, but I'm going to spoil it.
Anyway, so these joys, when you first encounter them, one's actually mimicking Bayonetta. I won't tell you what happens because it's actually kind of enjoyable to watch, but then you fight her. And when you go to torture her, well, how do I explain this?
Oh, you know exactly how to explain it.
I do. So Bayonetta summons this rock, like a pewter.
It's definitely stone.
Pleasure pony has some ridges on its back and a tail. and she sits on top of its head and she throws this chain around, and the Joy sees it coming. Like, I actually really like that every one of these enemies, as soon as you go into a torture attack, it respond like it has a movement or a look like, holy shit.
Yes.
No, so like they're not just standing there waiting to get punished, like they start to regret that they're fucking with you. Which is really smart. They really should have done this in games long before now. But anyway, I digress. Going back to the Joy torture. Chain goes around the Joy's neck and happens to magically fold underneath her very voluptuous boobies, which then jiggle.
Yes. So,
and it's really weird because, you know, she's kind of in an angel gimp suit. But apparently that's kind of just her skin because these boobies move very boob-like.
Yes.
You know, and she then gets put on the back end of this pleasure pony. And she pretty much gets excited to the point that her head explodes.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Oh, and yes, her whole body really.
Yeah, well, most of it, yeah. But anyway, when the first time I played through this level and I got to torture her, I kind of sat there after I'd seen it and was like, did I just see what I think I just saw? And of course I got a pure platinum for the level, so of course then Bayonetta was just kind of like, oh. And yeah, I had to go and do that, you guys. I'm sorry. Yeah, needless to say, tortures are fun. I wish they had put more joys in the game because you don't have too many options in the game throughout a single gameplay to do this particular torture to, you know, this many joys, because I think there's maybe only 5 in the whole game that you could even be remotely close enough to do this type of attack with.
Yeah.
But needless to say, this game will definitely keep your attention if you think you're going to nod off. Just torture a Joy. That'll snap you out of it, or at least it will wake up.
Something will wake up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're a particular gender. And if you're not and you happen to like girls, well, this will work for everybody. Even moms who are in the kitchen who don't realize what you're playing and then come in going, what are you playing?
Yeah. But then they'll sit down and watch. Now, yeah. let's take a step back here, because okay. We didn't really talk about the plot, because there is one.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. Kinda, yeah. No, there is one. So, basically, the game is about figuring out Bayonetta's past. We find out that...
Oh, no, a dark hero who doesn't remember anything about herself because she's been in the bottom of a lake for, what, 500 years?
Yeah, she's been in the bottom of the lake for a little while.
Well, no, she hasn't been under the lake. She hasn't been in the lake for 500 years. I'm sorry. They found her 20 years from the start point of the game in the lake, but she's been alive for 500 plus 20 years.
Yes. Plus.
Looks damn good for 520.
Yeah, you know, she's aged really well.
Yeah.
Let's just say. No droopage.
So sure. think naughty British librarian.
Witch.
Dominatrix.
Dominatrix.
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah. That's pretty much her in the nutshell. But the story is she's trying to, one, stay out of hell. Because a deal
she
has
made
been
a pact
made
with the devil.
Yeah, and so what she has to do is she has to give them sacrifices in order for them to not claim her. So she sacrifices...
Angels.
Angels, basically.
Yep.
To the depths of hell in order to stay out of hell herself.
Yep.
So she's not a goody-goody and doesn't play like she's a goody-goody at all.
No.
As you progress through the game, you realize and you find out that she doesn't really know all of her past, and she's curious about it but isn't too awful aggressively seeking it out.
Yeah. She's kind of like, well, if you find out something, let me know. That's our arrangement. But, I mean, I'm just trying to stay out of hell.
Yeah, that's pretty much how she's playing. As you go through the game, you're introduced to other characters, Jean, and then some history. There are flashbacks that happen. And the style of the flashbacks are that they're not full motion video in the sense that we're used to.
They make you participate.
Basically, there are some
wrong participation.
There are some flashbacks that do have quick time events in them. But other flashbacks, the characters themselves, while they are having a dialogue and there's action going on with the dialogue, the characters themselves are not moving. They're presented as kind of frames in a strip, in a movie film strip.
Oh my god, kind of like Wet, but better?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my thought.
Yeah. And so it's a very interesting mechanic because you find yourself a little bit more engaged with each flashback as opposed to, oh, here's another flashback I have to sit through. So I thought that was a really interesting mechanic. But you're introduced to this rich history of Lumen Sages and Umbra Witches and Bayonetta as we go through the game. If you're not, you know, dumb, you figure out is an Umbra Witch.
Mm.
And not... Let's be. I'll get to that.
Okay.
She's definitely not a straight up Lumen Sage.
And then, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, that is accurate.
All right. So we'll continue forward. She has a lot of the powers of Umbra Witches. And through flashbacks, as you play through the game, like I said, I warned you, we're going to spoil it for you, or at least I am. You learn that Bayonetta is not. Quite a number of ways.
She's an outcast because her mommy got busy with the sage.
So she is a half-breed.
Yep. So that whole, if you played the demo on the 360 and you got that opening cutscene where Bayonetta's on a falling clock tower from a cliff that it seems to be very, 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 very long. Kind of like the tallest mountain in Olympus. Different game. Anyway, I had to make that reference. That whole opening scene is kind of where the exposition to this whole story happens. So, I mean, you actually see a lot of the demo in the first few bits of the game, which I kind of liked, instead of them trying to piece different parts that look like they're the same, but not.
Yeah, they pretty much gave you the opening level, which is, you know,
well,
I think
it's great. Well, for the 360, they didn't do that for the PS3.
Right. As you go through the game, you realize that someone is trying to collect what's called the left eye and the right eye.
The eyes of the world.
Which are used to awaken what's called the
Jubileus.
Creator, or Jubileus. To resurrect and create an all new world. And originally, the Lumen Sages and the Umbra Witches were the overseers and protectors of the left and the right eye. However, through time, witch hunts, and all kinds of other things, the Umbra Witches have all but been wiped out from the planet.
Well, because the Lumen Sages started losing their power, and the Umbra Witches were like, we're going to take them bitches down and weaken them. But then everyone was like, oh, the witches, they're way too powerful. We need to get rid of them. And then the witch hunts happen until there was only one Umbran witch left.
Jean.
Yeah. Because as we told you just several moments ago, or at least Ninja did, Bayonetta is a half-breed. Yes.
Okay, so battle, 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 fight, fight, fight. The design of the angel characters, and really all of the characters in the game, I find to be very interesting. You know, they kind
of... This game makes me fear angels.
Yeah, because while it seems like a lot of the angels are in some way either attracted to Bayonetta or themselves sexual in nature. I mean, there was one time where you were fighting and you were riding on the back of this kind of serpent angel, and Bayonetta's like stroking the side of his, I guess what would be part of his face, and he like perks up and his tail then sticks straight up in the air, and I was like, you did not just make that dragon lizard thing horny. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. That's got to be like a fallen angel, right? But it's not.
And then he wasn't fallen anymore. Boing.
And a lot of times Bayonetta does flirt with angels, and sometimes
she makes it sound like they're having sex. Like, oh, you have time for another round, don't you? Or she'll say things like that. Like, there's a fight, I won't say what boss and I won't say when, but you encounter a stuffed animal who's been hurt. Cheshire. And his eye's been ripped out. And she and the banter, the dialogue, the comedic timing, it's all there. Like, this game is not meant to be taken seriously.
No, not
so
at all.
If you were expecting the same kind of deep, semi-dark, broody Dante, but a chick, you're not going to get it here because, for one, the chick's practically naked. She's wearing her hair, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, that was kind of surprised me.
Can't really be that serious when you're pretty much naked. Anyway, so she's talking to the stuffed animal, and she's like, "Oh, well, what do you expect we do about this kitty?" You know, and she tips it up to her head, and she's like, "Make him pay." And you utterly kick the ever-loving fuck out of this boss. And when you go back to the kitty, you're like, "Well, was that enough, kitty? You say that's still not enough?" You know, and now mind you, there's only probably one face left to this boss. You know, it's like, "Well, you can go for another round, can't you?" And I'm just like, you've beaten it into submission. What else could you possibly want from this thing? There's barely a face left. Like, she really doesn't waste any time putting the fucking hurt on any of these bosses. Any of them.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
As you, again, moving on, progress through the game, you get the ability to unlock all kinds of different things. There are different accessories that you can get, which will change Bayonetta's power, both in how she delivers her attacks, from how much damage she takes, and there's always a counterbalance. So it kind of reminds me of, you know, Full Metal Alchemist, in that you can get one thing, but you have to give up another. And that seems to be a running theme throughout the game is, well, you can have power, but you're going to have to, you know, give up your sanity, or you're going to have to give up something precious to you in order to have it. And you keep going through the game and learn that Jubileus is not really a thing that should be unleashed upon the world.
Nope.
And there's an entire side story to when Bayonetta was woken up. Some things happened. Somebody died.
And that's somebody died, and now somebody wants vengeance because they don't know shit. But yet he is also, I'm not going to give names, but Luca, he's very attracted to Bayonetta.
Yeah, they're
it's Luca, weird. He wanted to chase her because he wanted her to reveal the truth, but in all honesty, he just wanted her to reveal her boobs.
Pretty much. I mean, there's a cut scene after you're introduced to Luca, which I think happens very, like, at the beginning of the second, or like middle of the second,
I'd say middle of chapter two.
Yeah. And Luca, very much in his design, is young, spirited.
Loves the ladies.
Yeah, trying to be a Lothario, but not exactly there.
If you've played Lost Odyssey, I know you haven't, Ninja.
No.
Because it was a JRPG.
Yeah.
But for those out there who have, if you remember Jansen, make Jansen a little younger, and give yourself, like, +8 charisma to him. Because, believe it or not, Luca is very lovable.
He is.
Jansen is not. But take Jansen's look, make him maybe 25, and make him a guy that you would go out on a date with, and this is Luca.
Luca ends up caring for Ceresa, who is the little girl that we're introduced with the glasses, and more of Bayonetta's backstory happens through that. But what's interesting about Luca, like you said, you know, he spends a lot of the game chasing after Bayonetta and saying that he's going to confront her and reveal her to the world, and everyone will know that she killed his dad, and blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah. I have unresolved daddy issues, blah, 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 blah.
Turns out to be a great sidekick for her, you know, the reluctant sidekick, kind of like Trish in Devil May Cry, which is, you know, very easy.
I don't think he's nearly as cool as Trish.
He's not as cool as Trish, but as far as the
youth, I get it, but I'm just saying, I don't think he was nearly as, because she's just like, I'm a badass.
But she cried.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Okay? She cried.
Yeah.
Okay. He didn't cry. We gotta give it up to him there.
All right.
But what's really interesting is that there was one cutscene after defeating a lot of entities where Lucas thinks that he's gonna be able to trap Bayonetta and get a picture of her, and it backfires. At the end of it, Bayonetta, like, jumps on top of him and tackles him. And as they're flying through the air, Luca reaches down and slow motion grabs and caresses her ass. Bayonetta then slowly brings him into her boobs. They land on the ground. He's like, what? But he still has his hand on her ass. And she's like, shh, and puts her fingers on his lips. And I swear you see him get a boner.
No offense, Ninja, but any man in that situation would have had a boner when he touched her ass, not when she put his finger to his mouth.
Just saying. That's what it looked like. So there's definitely a lot of sexual overtone.
I was so hoping that they were going to fuck at the very end of the game, but
it's heavily implied that
there was fucking. It was heavily implied, but you don't see it.
How was it implied? Because I have finished the game on very easy, and I'm playing through now on normal so I can unlock all the study costumes.
Because if you listen to a lot of their conversation about the, oh, you know, if you don't get that look off your face, I won't let you keep chasing me after the, you know, chasing me all over the place. So obviously she likes the attention.
It's Bayonetta.
She's not shy sexually in any stretch of the imagination. Also depicted through dialogue.
Oh, and you know, the random humping of things. Like, every time she pulls a lever, she wraps around it like a pole dancer.
And she rubs it in her hoo-ha.
And rides it all the way down.
Everything, pretty much everything in this game is some symbolic of a penis.
Yes, and Bayonetta does something sexual to it.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Runs up a shaft, you know, like as a kitty. Kitty and shaft. Come on. If I could see it, you can see it. And if you can see it, that 12-year-old kid can see it.
Okay, there are...
fapping to it. Fap fest. Enjoyable, nonetheless.
Told you I was sick. But here's the thing that kills me about Bayonetta. Love it.
Oh.
No, I absolutely love it. You know, the story is just present enough to keep me interested. The gameplay is just way over the top and makes absolutely no concessions whatsoever to be anything other than enjoyable action game. Mm-hmm. Okay, I should hate this character because she's just a sex pot clad in leather and her own hair.
There's no leather, that's all her hair.
Well, there are times where you can, depending upon...
It looks like a leather suit, but we know it's her hair.
Well, depending upon the costume that you're wearing, though, some of them are actually clothes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Like, the PE outfit is clothing.
Is that the one with her with the pom-poms?
No, that's the cheerleader outfit. There's, like, a traditional Japanese PE outfit where she has on a t-shirt and then short shorts or, like, a bikini bottom.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So there are some that are actually clothes. And the thing is, you know, this game should be, just in the description, something that as a female gamer, I should be absolutely
livid about.
And I'm not. I love this game. It is fast-paced. It is not...
Not to mention, it has no problems making fun of itself and takes the best elements from other types of themed games that we have loved in the past.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I love that it's got some of the similar gameplay elements as a Devil May Cry game because I absolutely love Devil May Cry as a series. I own all of them.
Yep, yes, me too.
Including the bad one.
Yeah.
And I play it through and, you know, what I love about Bayonetta is that it is just fun. Whether you never play it on anything other than very easy just to get through it, it's great. When you finish the game, there's a freaking music video.
I know. Her dancing in every level that she's ever fought in. Either with, you know, like NPC joyish type things with the same outfit as her, or Lucas standing in the background, or Rodan standing on the background, or Fat Joe Pesci. Don't think I would forget about that.
You know, that's one thing about that. Like, the moment that I heard Enzo's voice, who Enzo you're introduced to in the first freaking FMV is kind of like the sidekick that lines up her ability to get a hold of some angels, is definitely Joe Pesci.
Yeah, Fat Joe Pesci. Older Fat Joe Pesci.
Older, fatter Joe Pesci.
Yep.
You know, so
is it actually him? Like, is it actually his voice? Because whoever this is so fucking close.
Is very, very close to Joe Pesci, but it is not. You know, there are just the right amount of comic elements, the right amount of, you know, seriousness in the game. You know, there are definitely some tension moments when Bayonetta finally really wants to take care of Sarasa and is realizing that they probably are related.
in some way.
Right. You know, they're very, very cute, tense moments, and you start aligning with the character and then realizing, you know what? She's just really badass, but in a sexual way without being dumb. And that's why I'm not real quick to call her trampy or slutty, because she's not. I mean, she's not giving it away. She's not literally fucking everything, but she is definitely
dry-humping everything.
She's doing everything with a sexual tone, but at no point in time does she like go
you
into
don't
the
see,
phone.
You don't see me sweeping the kitchen floor like dry-humping the broom.
Just because I haven't seen you do it doesn't mean you don't
Oh my god, I would never do that. The broom is horrible.
How do you know? All right, anyway, moving on.
You're
She does everything with a very strong sexual...
Pronounced sexual...
Overtone. And I...
Overtone, undertone, intone.
But that is definitely different from being a slut. Okay, if she was a slut, she would first fuck all of the angels and then kill them. Not kill them in a sexually taught way. Like the guillotine attack, one thing I notice is that after she lobs the angel's head into the guillotine, she kicks them repeatedly, where you can do a megaton attack, which is basically a button mash multiplier for your reward for killing this angel. And after about the first kick in the ass, the angel perks his ass up, and so you really are just putting the spike of your boot in their asshole.
Yeah, I know. And they like it.
And they like it.
Well, they like it up until their head gets lopped off.
They like it until their head gets lopped off, and then they're not really happy about it.
No.
The Wicked Weave attacks are also really interesting, in which she uses her hair to summon pretty much a demon that finishes off a lot of your boss battles. What I will say is that the final battle in Bayonetta, as we're coming up on time here, is unbelievably long. It's like the only negative thing that I have to say about this game is that that boss battle with Jubileus... Holy shit, nuggets. That thing
it's
was
not nearly
long.
As long if you know what to do.
Yeah, I know what to do. Okay.
My first gameplay only took me... I'm actually really upset. First gameplay on normal took me 13 hours and 38 minutes. Can you see where I'm mad?
13 hours and 38 minutes?
Mm-hmm. Can you see where I'm mad?
Because you were 5 minutes over from being 13:33?
No, 13:37. Is Lee.
Oh, okay.
I was 1 minute shy. One.
You're 1 minute over being Leet.
Yep.
Well, it means you're not Leet.
I know.
But here's the thing. You know, the boss battle itself. So Jubileus, massive, massive statue. Battle happens in space. Because where else are you going to basically be fighting Jesus?
Well, you wouldn't know. No. If we're going to go there in terms of big statue fights... I remember in the bad Devil May Cry, you fight a giant statue with the same kind of premise as Jubileus in space.
Right.
So you can fight it on Earth. They just chose to bring it into space because they had nowhere else to fucking do it.
But here's my thing. Okay, so you get through all of stuff. You basically run out of Hades. You go through Purgatory. You go through Paradiso. Now you get to the point where, Jubileus is awake and is a chick and is going to destroy every fucking thing. And it's up to you to defeat God.
Yep.
The battle takes for fucking ever. And don't say it's short if you know what to do. Okay, all you gotta do is get the bitch to drop her hair. So you can kill the little head thingies in her hair. But she's got like 10 of them.
Yeah.
And it takes forever to get her to stick the shit in the ground.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No.
Yeah.
There's a finesse. I can do. I've always done that. I've always gotten a platinum or a pure platinum for time on that. And damage.
Yeah, well, okay, maybe you're just a better gamer than I am, because...
Well, maybe only in Bayonetta, though.
Because that battle took me about 10 minutes to do.
Nope. Anyway.
But afterwards, you get treated to a pole dance.
And by you, she means you guys and us as the gamer.
Correct. Because Bayonetta does a pole dance to the song that she pretty much sings and plays throughout the whole damn
game.
And then... After that, there's some fighting that you can do. So you actually get to fight through the credits. a thing
which can beef up your score, so it's actually prevalent that you do it.
Yep, and it was also a thing that you got to do at the end of the last Devil May Cry game, Devil May Cry 4. So again, you know, there's a lot of parallels there. And then after all of that, and you sum up your game, you get the dance video. So all in all, I think that Bayonetta is a solid game. It's probably not a buy game for a lot of people, but damn it, you need to rent it at minimum. I am so glad that I pre-ordered this game. I am really enjoying it. I can't say enough about it. Platinum Games, you guys really, really stepped up what a fun action game can be. You know, one that doesn't take itself too seriously, that does have a female lead who is not a slut, but very sexual and pretty smart. So I take my hat off to you.
I'm not wearing a hat, but the sentiment is the same.
Yeah, yeah. I am actually wearing a hat, so I could...
Oh, well, then good for you.
So really quickly, as we're just about out of time here. Okay, Avatar. One, I have not played the game. Two, I have not seen the movie. So I have absolutely no opinion, I'm sorry, Trinity, about it.
Me, have not seen it, have not played it. Eshmom wants to see it because she likes the blue people. That's all the comment I have.
Eshmom likes Smurfs. Just saying. Big Smurfs, little Smurfs. We're just saying she likes Smurfs.
She thinks it looks pretty. Apparently James Cameron wants the fanboys to step the fuck off, but that's all I know.
Yeah. Now, we will at some point see it, and when we do, we will have an opinion for you. Just like some of the other opinions that we have on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. Or you can visit us on the short address, which is...
ESH.mobi. That's ESH.mobi. The short address will bounce into the long one, and you can check out any articles that have been written within the week. If you have any questions about those articles or just questions for us, you can email us at questions@esh.mobi. If you aren't listening to us on iTunes, you can check us out there. You can plug us into any RSS reader, any podcast search engine, and we're also a part of the All Games Network.
That's right. You can find episodes of our podcast airing each week on Wednesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time, on the All Games Radio Network, found at allgames.com. And before you bounce in to listen to our show, make sure that you check out All Games earlier in the day or in the week, and check out some of the other really entertaining shows that they have there, like Dead Pixel Live.
Or Gametopius. Hi, Ted.
There's also Chatterbox Radio.
And there's In-Game Chat.
There's Orange Sound Radio.
There's Video Game Outsiders Live.
There's TQ Cast.
There is Bobby Blackwolf Show. And Friday Night Gaming has come back to the lineup.
There's the Platform Nation Spotlight. Fantastic Forum. There's all kinds of really wonderful entertainment over there. You can bounce into chat while shows are airing live and interact with other people listening to the show and even some of the show hosts. So make sure that when you're checking out All Games and you bounce into the chat that you let them know that the chicks from Electric Sisterhood sent you. Because we did.
Well, she did.
Well, yeah. You can also follow some of the shows that we do internally, like the Boston Bass Brigade, found at bostonbassbrigade.com and home by our very own King Baby Duck, as well as Geek Aggro, hosted by our very own Deuces Wild. New episodes of the Boston Bass Brigade come out on Tuesday. New episodes of Geek Aggro come out on Wednesday. So between the three of us, we got you hooked till hump day. And then to get you through the rest of the week, there's all the stuff on the website and our Twitter stuff. So make sure that you're following me. I'm at twitter.com/ninjasista.
And I'm at twitter.com/ladyesh.
You can also follow King Baby Duck at twitter.com/king_baby_duck. Deuces Wild at twitter.com/deuceswild. And our boy Vicious Smith at www.twitter.com/viciousSmith. We also have a Facebook group, so if you want to hook up with us there, you can do that. Panda's owning that shit.
I'm the admin there. So come say hello.
You interact with her questionnesses and things
like
that.
Come interact with me.
So, with all that business out of the way, and before we get to the extra bits from CES, do you have anything you want to declare for the people?
I want to declare that gin is very good.
Okay.
As a drink.
I see.
And that Dragon Age is the wow I've been looking for.
But not like the wow?
Like, I mean like the wow. Like the wow that you hated, I have now found it in console form.
Oh, God. This is not good.
I'm about to get laid. Anything you want to disclose?
I would like to disclose that... I am what you would call vertically challenged. But I embrace it and own it. And it makes being a ninja a lot easier.
You're vertically challenged, so you are always on your back?
I didn't say horizontally challenged, you moron.
Well, if you're horizontally challenged, you wouldn't be on your horizontal.
I said vertical.
If you have
as in I'm not tall.
Well, then you know what? You need to say that, because when you say you're not vertically challenged,
you need to stop drinking gin before a podcast.
Anyway.
So with that, I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
We are out of here, people.
Have a good week.
And enjoy the extra bits from CES 2010. In this piece, Evermore talks to John Groderm of Optoma about their new gaming projector systems. It's kind of cool. Have a listen.
So what we're doing here at CES is announcing our Game Time series. Two models. One's the GT720, the other's GT360. If you will, one's high resolution, high def, the other is more targeted for your Wii type product.
Uh-huh.
But what it really is a product series that's more than just, you know, projectors in the home. It can be used for gaming, watching movies, video, TV, any type of application. So when you think of a projector as a gaming machine or a home type piece, we've always been constrained with a couple of, why are you doing it? I mean, you have the traditional HD projectors that just do movies, right? That's what we use them for. Or you just do a video. Well, projectors are a real experiential thing when it comes to a category. And, you know, entertainment is an experiential medium. So the number one type of device that nearly is ubiquitous across homes, besides, you know, you have the cable and cable systems. After that, you have DVD players. Left of that is the game machines. So what do people want? Well, how do you adapt and move into those whole gaming markets with folks? Well, a big image is a huge thing. You want a big image. So we got a 113-inch image over here in our theater. You hear the words immersive gaming all the time. Yeah. Well, our competition isn't, you know, it's 50-inch panels. Well, here's 100-plus-inch, bigger, bolder, more vivid. You know, your life-size guys fighting here, if you will. We're doing it with a projector. You can see it's more or less on the floor. So it's a coffee table mounted projector. It's got what we call a short throw lens on it. So the idea is to get as close to a wall as you can be, real close to the unit itself, have a huge image. That's what this is about. Next thing, we've added enhanced audio to the projector itself. Some game machines, you know, you want it to be as versatile. Some are hooked into an audio system already. A lot of them are. Maybe someone, you know, like a kid or whatever wants to take a Wii up to their bedroom with their friends. Well, here's the audio system, and you're done, right? The other thing we're doing is we're also putting a backpack with this, so you can put it away and store it, and it's self-contained. It, you know, you want to add your Wii or your Xbox or a PS3 or whatever in that also and take it around, you can do that. So the idea is to be as versatile and hit as many possible needs of a market and of consumers and really expand into that experiential gaming with a projector and make this a different, more fun alternative and really make a new market space for projectors in the home. All of our technologies that we do, all of our projector products are based off of Texas Instruments DLP, the chips. So all the projector light engines are DLP based. What that means is it is the fastest way to produce an image. We actually have faster response times with DLP than you will on a plasma or an LCD TV or LED TV today. That's the advantage. So we're millisecond type responses, and it's the fastest, most accurate you can get. We've added 3D capabilities to all of these to these projectors. So when the new wave of 3D games come down the line, which allegedly are being introduced this week, from what I've been told, we'll have all the 3D ready out. What we're doing is we're basically putting 120 Hz input into it, and then you can use the glasses to split 60 Hz each eye, so you have the overlaid images. So you pick up responsiveness, 3D.
Oh, I want to have that so much.
Well, out of the two of us, you could probably afford one faster than me.
Don't be a sad panda. But think about it. 113 inches of Gears of War in your living room. Doesn't one just...
Or digital cock!
No. You had to go there. We've been really good about not getting digital cock for the last few months. Why do you have to bring it up?
Well, yes.
But it's really interesting to see the technology and how it's changed so much, and that, you know, bigger is now truly becoming better. You know, we've gotten...
I always thought big was good.
Yes, but now it's better. Okay, that you could have a projector that can keep up, you know, and dish out 720p for your Xbox 360 or your Blu-ray player, and it be a projector system under a grand is a hell of a leap from where we were even 2 years ago. I mean, if you think about it, you get somebody, I mean, I see this going on in backyard barbecues next year, okay? You get, you know, a white sheet, you know, or, you know, a solid wall. Somebody brings over their projector that has an audio system in it. You hook up the Xbox or the Wii, and now you're outside at your barbecue. The kids are playing freaking Wii or the corner. Everybody's happy. The adults are playing poker. I'm just saying, there's food and Wii for everybody.
I don't know if I like the idea of Wii out in the public for people to see.
Well, maybe not your Wii. But other anybody's people can take Wii.
You don't want Wii out in the public? It's kind of embarrassing.
Well, the stuff from Aptoma definitely is not. And we want to thank John for spending time with us and talking to us and showing. Because, man, woo, gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. Some of the new projectors from Aptoma. In this next piece, I actually interview my man, Bill, over at Blue Microphone to talk about some of the new things they had to show at CES.
What Blue has new here at CES is our new Mikey. So this is the second generation Mikey. It's a stereo recording microphone you can plug into your iPod or iPhone. It's great for live recordings. If you wanted to go to a concert and take home a CD quality recording, you could throw Mikey in your pocket with your iPod and get a great quality recording to take home. Records in stereo, and it has three different gain settings. So if you're in a lecture hall in the back of the room, you'd put it at the most sensitive so you could hear the lecture and it boosts the sound. And if you're at a rock show at night, you could put it in the three-wave setting and it'll dampen all the outside noise and it'll just pick up the main audio source.
Cool.
So some really interesting technology built into it to do that. We've gotten a lot of good feedback on it being a great tool for live recording. The other unique thing we have with the new version is it swivels all the way around. So if you're recording video and you want to capture the audio with Mikey, it's now great at doing that as well because it'll pick up the audio through the Mikey. And it has a line input and USB pass-through, so you can charge your iPod while you're using it.
Fantastic.
Yeah. The other product we're featuring here is called Yeti.
Okay.
So what Yeti is a triple capsule condenser microphone.
Okay.
So it's really the top of the line USB microphone that's on the market. Has a mute button, has a built-in headphone preamp, so it can actually boost the sound quality of your computer. So if you have music that you want to listen to through the Yeti, it'll actually improve that sound and enrich it with the built-in headphone amplifier. The other thing you could do with the headphone output is monitor yourself. So if you're doing a podcast, voiceover for a video, or singing a song, you can actually hear yourself while you're doing it.
Very cool.
Those three capsules give us some unique things. You could do four different patterns here. You could do stereo, omni, cardioid, or figure of eight. And all of those are good for different settings. So if you're doing an interview, you do the figure of eight because then you'll get that back and forth effect. If you're, you know, in a garage and everyone's talking or singing, you'd want to use omni because it'll pick up everything around you. And then cardioid if you're just talking into it. And then stereo is really good for music. If you're, you know, playing a guitar, singing, it's a really good setting to do for that one. And then the other unique thing that Yeti has is it's the first ever THX certified microphone. So it goes through the testing and quality standards that THX is really known for in the audio industry to make sure that the quality is there on each one of the Yetis when we put them out. So
So who are you mostly aggressively marketing the Yeti for? Is it mostly for podcasters or live performance?
Yeah, I think the two main audiences for it are podcasters, people that are doing voice work, either, you know, I would say up-and-coming podcasters or someone that's doing voiceover for a home video. Really someone that wants quality audio, that wants to keep it or share it with a lot of people. And then the second one is a home musician. What Yeti has that no other USB microphone has done before is all of these different polar patterns that normally you would need to spend hundreds or if not thousands of dollars to buy microphones that do what Yeti can do. So you can do everything from record a guitar, sing, play drums, record a choir. I mean, you could do every element to record a song and get a quality output with Yeti. So it's really the first time you have a fully functioning, what I would call studio lineup of microphones in a single device.
So, let me make sure I get this straight. Like an upcoming podcaster like Mewa,
yeah,
would probably want to invest in a Yeti.
Yes.
All of you people out there doing voice work like me may want to look into stuff like this. I mean, if it's really something that you want to pursue aggressively, and yes, aggressively is the word that you should use, then you always want the best audio. I mean, I don't know, but not too long ago, our audio sucked.
Yeah, like really bad.
Like really bad. If we had had a Yeti then, could you imagine just how many of you would love us now? More so?
Pretty much. The really interesting thing about Blue Microphone, so I'm going to give a bit of disclosure here, is that they actually let me use one of the Mikey microphones for iPhone, because that's how we did all of our interviews during CES, which was on the iPhone, for the interview. And when we finished, they let me keep it, which was cool because it really took the rest of my interviews and made them a lot easier and a lot clearer. So proof is in the pudding. When you listen to the interviews on the phone, you can tell the difference in the audio quality. And it really is a very small footprint. So if you do any kind of dictation or in class, the Mikey is something that you definitely want to pick up. And that price point's about $80. But as far as the Yeti goes, right now they're haven't released it yet. So they don't have a price point actually on their site, but it's probably going to retail for somewhere in the area of the Snowball microphone. So I would say probably somewhere in the 100, 120, 160 range, mm-hmm. because it is a hell of a microphone. In this next clip, we have a little bit of a blurb from Colin Hutt of Bandshell to talk about the new case that they have for the iPhone.
What we've got is a new iPhone case that just launched, and it's obviously the first thing you want in a case is protection, so it does that. It's made of durable ABS plastic, but it's got two other features that really make it stand out. It's got a stand, so you can set it at a 75-degree angle, so you can view it very easily. And then what's really cool about it, it's got a retractable sound door that's patented, and when you do that, it's creating sort of the same effect that a band shell does, and that's what the case is called, actually. It's called the band shell case, and it brings the audio forward, similar to how the acoustics would be amplified in an amphitheater. And when you do that, you can watch movies hands-free. You can set the iPhone down and have it standing on its flat side of the case, and then have the sound door out, and then you'll be often watching movies. It works great for plane rides. Works great for other applications when you just don't want to use earphones. Like a lot of people use it when they're cooking because you know you're moving around a lot and you don't want to have the earphones in the way. And it's just a really nice way to get more functionality out of your iPhone.
So with a little bit of disclosure here, Colin actually gave us a couple of band shells.
Can I have one?
Maybe, if you're good.
Yay! I'm good all the time!
The first thing I have to say about these things is that they are very sturdy. It's made of a very hard plastic, so It's something that once you get on your phone, you're definitely not going to want to be playing with it, taking it on and off all the time. But I really like the idea of the sound door because, you know, iPhone, whether you love it or you hate it, it's a big part of your life when you have one. And, you know, I use mine when I travel, when I cook, you know, before I'm getting ready for a show and afterwards. And I can tell you there's all kinds of cases that I have for specialty uses. But I could definitely see somebody, you know, that wants to have a little bit better sound out of the iPhone, because let's face it, the speaker kind of sucks by itself in the iPhone. You definitely want something to make it better. But you should definitely check out Bandshell. And if you do, throw Colin a what-what and let him know that you heard about it from us.